If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
There's nothing like having your own theme song as a columnist, and now I have a buddy sitting next to me, Scott Stannis, excellent cartoonist from the Chicago Tribune. Hello, Scott.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I put out on Facebook that you're a badass from Alabama, but really you're from Wisconsin.
Well, this gets complicated, John. I was born in the first 11 years of my life in Southern California, lived a year in Texas, went to junior high and high school in Madison, Wisconsin, moved back to Los Angeles where I went to college, and then had jobs all over the country. So
you're kind of like a rootless fellow.
I am. It's sad. I don't have a hometown, which is kind of sad. I really, like, you're born and raised in Chicago. You've got a hometown. These are your roots, your people.
The peeps. You know, later on, we're going to take questions that I post on Facebook every week, and we say, you know, do you have any questions? And there are questions for Scott Stannis, too. We'll read those. It's Valentine's week.
Yeah.
You're probably still feeling the glow of, you know, cuddling up to your honey, like, hi, honey, I love you, I love you. You know, that whole thing, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And it's true. Come on,
it's
a little romance.
Yes, we're old married guys, and there's still a little romance, a little flame.
We're old married guys, but you know what? I love being a dad, and I love being married.
Yeah, same here. It's a good thing. It really, and it's, you know, that's unlike, I mean, we're not saying that like politicians. You know, we're not like, my son and his wife, she just got her doctorate down in New Zealand. They've been gone for 4 years. They've come back to the country. They flew back to Chicago. They're here for at least 3 weeks. And John can tell you, just look at my face. I'm glowing.
I wouldn't say you're glowing, but
it's ridiculous. Well, I'm not pregnant.
Not going to go.
You're not going to go there?
Not going to go overboard. Jeff Carlin, what do you think?
I think you're glowing.
You're
a single man.
It might be the glass, but it looks like a glow.
Isn't it? He is kind of a little pinkish now.
A little bit.
There's an aura.
Yes, I think it might be our next guests that are making him glow.
You are Jeff Carlin. You're the mastermind of the Chicago Way, and you know how to move radio along. Joining us now and bringing me back into the Wayback Machine of Time are the two drivers of the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, Kelly Mustard, what? Ketchup Kelly and Mustard Molly.
Yes.
Yeah. What are your real names?
I am Molly.
Yeah, and I'm Kelly.
Are those your fake names?
100%
no.
100% real name. Give it at birth.
Oh, yeah. It's even on my name tag.
Why can't you tell us? What are you? Seriously, is this witness protection? I mean, you really can't tell us your names, right?
It is a pretty coveted job, so, you know, we can't have people tracking us down too badly, you know?
All right, so let's explain to listeners who are weirded out that your voices just came on and you're nice and perky and chipper, and, you know, we're newspaper guys and we're none of that.
And named after condiments.
And they're named after condiments. All right, so you drive this huge van. This huge...
27 feet long.
Right?
Yes, hot dog on wheels.
And what do you do? Where do you go?
Yeah, we go all around the country spreading what we like to call miles of smiles on the hot dog highways of America.
We're in a new city just about once a week, so always on the go.
Do you drive it, or does someone else drive it and you just show up and...
Oh, we drive it.
Everywhere.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are on, like, some lame-ass highway, like... In
the hot dog highways of America, you mean.
And you're like, where's a Hardee's? Can you even get out of the van and eat something else?
Absolutely.
Do you have a steam table in there next to the console? If you haven't seen it, guys, and I'm sure you have, it's like 27 foot long hot dog on wheels. How do you steer that thing?
Just like any old car, but you have to be careful of people taking pictures and stopping traffic to try to hunt you down.
Is it hard to drive? I mean,
no. We get trained up in Madison, Wisconsin for a 2-week training program called Hot Dog High, so where we learn all the ins and outs of the Wienermobile and how to navigate it on the road. So
when I was a little boy, I first saw the Wienermobile. It was on the south side of Chicago. My dad and Uncle George had a supermarket. And I was, you know, I worked there from the time I was, like, old enough to stand, because that's what Greek daycare is. You go work for your dad. All right? So I'm in the butcher shop with my apron tied up that my dad tied so it wouldn't drag on the floor. And here comes little Oscar and the Wienermobile. Little Oscar was a little person. Well, you know, one of the original Munchkins or something like that, mm-hmm. in Wizard of Oz.
And he was.
He came up and said, "Hello, how are you?" And then he gave us these little whistles.
Do you guys still have the whistles?
Absolutely.
Come on. Oh, they're so cute. Oh, yeah. And so what I did.
This is awesome.
So I told my dad, I said, "Dad, we should. Every woman in those days, women shopped, right? Guys didn't shop. Every woman who comes up and buys 5 pounds of ground meat gets a little Oscar." You know, he gave us 10 of them.
Oh,
little Oscar gets the wiener whistle. I didn't think I was marketing then, but I wasn't thinking ground meat. Why not hot dogs, right? Little and they all laughed. They thought it was crazy, but I think it would be a good marketing.
Oh, absolutely! People hunt us down for those whistles still to this day, and people have so many stories just like yours. We hear those all the time, and they're probably one of our favorite parts of the job.
What about little Oscar?
Little Oscar, their first time seeing the Wienermobile 30 years ago, getting that wiener whistle.
Don't you kind of hate little Oscar though, because people are comparing you all the time?
Well, no,
you know, like,
it's a low bar.
Like I saw, hi, very nice, Molly and Kelly. You're really nice, but little Oscar, like I just did.
Yeah, that's a low bar though.
It's like where Scott and I get. The great dead columnist or the great dead
cartoonist.
Like, you're not, well, what about him? And you're like, shut up, I'm alive, man.
Yeah, he's dead, I'm alive, I win.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, that's actually one of the cool things about the Wienermobile. It has such a rich history, and we get to be a part of it. So we're just happy to be part of such a long-standing tradition.
Okay, here's a question you get all the time. Is there more than one Wienermobile?
There are a total of six Wienermobiles, yes.
Is it a regional thing? So you guys are Midwest and Canada?
Correct. No, actually, it's just across the United States. So they're all based regionally. We're actually the central region. Northwest/Central.
So how far do you drive?
They'd say on average about the whole year, we'll probably put on about 30 to 40,000 miles.
Wow.
So.
And you guys went to college for this?
That's a great question.
What did you study in college?
Yeah. So you can't graduate in hot dogger. So each hot dogger has a different major. I actually double majored in English and psychology and minored in secondary education. So I'm a licensed teacher, but fulfilling my lifelong dream.
One of my sons wants to be a teacher. And you, what did you study?
I went for marketing. So kind of fits under the lines of the Wienermobile.
Yeah.
But
nice. Where did you study?
I'm from Madison, Wisconsin. So I went to University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, actually.
Where'd you go to high school?
Monona Grove.
Oh, okay. I went to West.
Okay.
Go Regents.
Cool.
He's the only conservative that came out of the whole state.
Yeah, pretty much. Right? Pretty much.
And at Wisconsin, how could they even teach marketing? Isn't that business? And isn't business bad in Madison?
Well, you got to learn this, rise, ye children of starvation. You have to win international. You have the posters of Lenin. You know, that's marketing, too.
The Journal takes my column, so I love people of Wisconsin. But there was a weird turkey story someday. I'll tell Scott about later.
Okay.
It was about basically that wild turkeys.
He's gonna tell us
wild turkeys were attacking, were getting sexually aroused and attacking the legs of postal carriers in Madison.
What?
It's a weird story. It has nothing to do.
I think you're making this up.
At all with anything we're talking about.
That's John's go-to story for turkeys and mailmen.
Well, we're talking meat, so, and turkeys are basically made of meat.
Jeff Carlin, who's in the, just chimed in. Thanks, Jeff, for coming in here.
Glad to be here.
Jeff does it. Jeff is kind of weird. He doesn't really eat meat, right, Jeff?
I don't.
But if he did, tell us how you make a hot dog.
You go, Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys don't know how to do it. Not make a hot dog, but prepare one for consumption. We don't want to know about making the hot dog.
No, we really don't. We really don't want to know that part.
As in, like, cooking it? Is that what you're trying to get to?
Like,
your favorite recipe?
No, like, as in snouts and ears and stuff. Yeah, how do you prepare a hot dog? I go to the store. I see Kelly and
Molly,
yep.
And they're outside the Wienermobile at a store or at a shopping, and they have their little stand, right? Do you have a little stand?
We actually do not serve hot dogs. We just serve up our famous wiener whistles, so.
That totally sucks. What do you mean?
Yeah, no hot dogs are served. It is a common misconception.
Wait a second.
Get your lifetime hot dog.
Here's the hot dog, the big hot dog. Two nice people doing the hot dog dance or whatever, and we get whistle. We don't get hot dogs here? This is radio, isn't it, Jeff Carlin?
It's radio, yes. This is true.
We can't do this when we're doing our newspaper work because that would be unethical, but in radio,
we can get hot dogs.
Whatever it is.
But we got the whistle, which is awesome.
You're supposed to bring the hot dogs to
classic
us.
Well, now you have a lifetime hot dog with your wiener whistle.
You can technically only get it at the Wienermobile, so... Look, consider yourself lucky.
You're
got
lucky
it here today.
Came to you,
yeah,
John.
No wienermobile.
There are children going to bed without a wiener whistle.
Exactly. All right. So how does one prepare a hot dog? Do you know?
There's lots of different ways to cook a hot dog.
We were outside of a grocery store one time, and they started roasting them over a campfire. So
really?
There's all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
Ketchup or mustard.
Why not? I like both.
Why not both together? Ketchup and Kelly, we're good. Ketchup,
we're
Kelly,
great pair here.
Molly.
Come on.
Okay, so my kids are unemployed. How do they get this job?
Well, every year, Oscar Mayer hires 12 college grads from all across the country. So we recruit at college campuses. You can apply online. And then, come June, they select the 12. So.
But it is very competitive. Thousands of college grads every year apply for only 12 spots.
And you've been in how many states now?
So each hot dogger's journey is a little bit different. So far, I've been to, 29 states.
Wow.
In a little over 7 months.
In a giant hot dog.
Do you have to sleep in it, or do you have a chaperone and they have a hotel for you, or what?
It's not a weenie bagel.
So we stay in hotels.
Oh, nice. And you just park it where all the soccer moms want to park their vans for the tournaments.
Yep.
And you're there taking up all their space at the hotels.
That is one of the struggles, is finding parking, because we are 27 feet long.
How do you make a turn? Like, how do you turn, like, on Archer and Pulaski? How do you make
it? It has
turn?
A great radius.
Really?
Unbelievable.
Well,
yeah.
I actually read about that because I drew it in a cartoon recently because the corporate headquarters left Madison, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And so I drew the Wienermobile, which was fun, but... During the research, believe it or not, I actually read things and know things as a cartoonist. That will surprise many. But it's actually on a car chassis. It's not on a truck chassis.
No, it is a truck.
Was
it a truck car? Mm-hmm. I'd read that the old, maybe I'm thinking of the older one, was on a, not a Corvette, but a Cobra chassis, a Pontiac chassis. Now it's a truck chassis?
It is, yep. Just a standard truck chassis. So much like what they put under a UPS or a bread truck.
Okay, the difference, though, is that in a truck, you don't have, 10 feet of wiener in front of you as you're making a left turn.
Sorry.
Oh, you don't drive the freeways I do.
That's such a setup, wasn't it? So who does the driving? Do you guys fight?
Yeah, we both do.
Turn left, turn left, turn left. Don't make me turn.
Do you argue? I mean, that's got to happen.
Oh, absolutely. You got to have some fun on a long drive day. You got to have some type of debate or argument.
So you do the left, turn left, left. The other left. Do you do that? Yeah.
But we will say it's mostly singing. Often to the people outside. We have...
You sing, you're waving, looking outside.
Is there a hot dog song?
Of course.
Yeah, you don't know it?
Could you sing it for us?
Please. Okay, you got to join in with us. You can't
just I would like you to sing the song.
Oh, man.
And
our
Scott.
Voice?
I'll join
in.
Come on.
Okay. All right, on the count of three, guys. One, two, three.
Oh, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be.
And they sing this song as they drive across the
Midwest. If I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
You guys are so perky. Now you've made Stannis perky. I can't believe.
Thank you.
Perky Stannis. Usually he's in a dour mood around this time.
That's
he's
what the Wienermobile
does. What am I
going
to draw? I don't have anything to draw. What am I going to draw?
That's what the Wienermobile does. It makes people happy.
Right?
It does. That part must be awesome. In all seriousness, no one hates the Wienermobile. I mean, it's one of the few things in our culture
I'm starting
that
to hate
nobody
it now.
Can hate.
I'm starting to hate it now because there's no steam table there. If I see a Wienermobile, I expect to have a hot dog. And if I see two, the drivers of the Wienermobile, they come on this podcast, the Chicago Way. That's the Chicago Way. You don't bring the...
There you go.
Wow.
Very nice.
Guys, thanks so much, you hot doggers. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You brightened our day.
You sure did. Thank you.
That's what we love to hear. You guys brightened ours.
Mustard Molly and Ketchup Kelly. That's
very good.
Exactly. Very nice.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
someday,
you.
We relished the opportunity to be here.
And you know that I'm a real, I used to be an investigative reporter, so I will find out your real names.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So you guys are awesome. Thanks for being with
thanks,
us.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Forward march. Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Because if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
One of my favorite parts of the podcast, which, by the way, got a big write-up in the preeminent media column of Chicago, Robert Feeder, who said he liked it. He talked to me and said he liked it, which is really cool, right?
Hey, it's the first time I've gotten mentioned, and I'll take it.
You know what? One thing I learned from Steve Neal, the late political writer for the Sun-Times when I was a kid, and I'd get a quote for him if he needed a quote, he would sometimes put me on the byline. And I said, Steve, you don't have to do that. He goes, look, just share, man. And I like that. And Jeff Carlin came up with the idea of this podcast, which is breaking all sorts of internal records everywhere. And Scott Stannis is in today. You know, we said goodbye to Will Lee, who we saw out on the street freezing. Go ahead, freeze, Will.
Yeah, serves him
for
right.
Leaving me. And he's doing reporting. And we come to this part where I ask on Facebook, what questions do you have for me and for Scott, the badass from Alabama? And let's hear what people have to say.
All right, John, first one here. Jimmy John Capnera. How do you make those great Greek oven potatoes? We'll start with the
you mean the
softball.
The oven potatoes, they're kind of like in quarters long, and they're lemony with a crisp outside, and they have a little, just a little flavor of garlic, not too much, lemony and buttery and great. Ask my wife.
You don't make them?
She makes the potatoes.
Ah.
Dude. Did right. not know that. I thought it was you, John.
I'm not the potato man. I'm the meat man. Although I am working on a recipe. Maybe we should do one on the podcast. Lamb shanks with baked orzo.
Here's a good one, John. This is coming from Andy Bassney, especially coming off of last night's, as we tape this, New Hampshire loss.
Mm-hmm.
At what point during this campaign will Hillary need to show some tears? Starting to feel like 2008 all over again.
It's my party. I can cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Scott, what do you think of that?
I think
what
she's.
We're
going to see them within the next 7 days before South Carolina primary, before the Nevada primary, or caucuses rather. We're going to see. She's going to pull out all the stops. She's going to do to Bernie Sanders what George W. Bush did to John McCain in 2000.
So Bernie Sanders is going to have a black baby.
Yes.
That's
yes.
What the Bush people, right? They
yeah.
put it out right.
The push poll.
If
he
right?
had a black
like baby,
how would you feel about that?
Right.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be. I mean, these are the Clintons. This is how they play, and you know, they don't kiss nice. It's gonna be bad.
She looked, you know, when she rolled her eyes the other after the New Hampshire loss, which was huge, huge,
huge.
I mean, she rolled. She does that. She's babbling. It's like a grab bag of, I want to be a leftist, but I don't know how speech. And she's rolling her eyes, you know, the chin goes down, the eyes open, and you can see almost see inside of her head on
TV.
Yeah,
she can certainly see into her soul.
I thought I could see like a furry creature, like a rat or something running on the inside of her brain.
Yeah, it was not a good night for them. You and I both kind of love the idea that the establishment is getting kicked
on
in the nards.
On both sides. Nothing like,
it's awesome.
Nothing like Karl Rove grabbing his special purpose and crying. Okay, any other questions?
Yes. Here's a good one, John. This is Valentine's themed for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Angie Gores. Seriously, John, do not forget about your wife. Even if this is a Hallmark holiday, what is your plan? It needs to be good. Smile emoticon.
Well, this is going to be after the fact because...
Sure.
But I'll tell you this. Betty surprised me by... Because I broke my arm a few years ago and they had to cut my wedding ring off. And I've always wanted it. But you don't... Dads don't spend money on the, I'm in that, and Scott, you're in that thing?
Yeah. Oh,
dads
gosh,
don't,
yeah.
Dads don't spend money on themselves, sure. You know? Like now, this sweater I have, my wife bought, you know? It's like, okay, feed me, put some clothes on me, tell me what we're doing on Sunday, and I'll go to work the rest of the week, right?
Yeah.
And she said, we're getting the ring.
Oh.
And I said, honey, like she knew exactly that I wanted it. I want my wedding ring on. Is that crazy?
No.
I think I love being married. I love being married to my wife. And it's not like a testament. It's not like some sign. I don't mean it for that. I just like to. So that's what she's getting me. And Valentine's
Day. What are you getting her?
Yeah.
I don't know yet.
Oh.
I mean, I get flowers and, you know, she said, don't get me candy because she's in those Zumba classes. She's doing really well. Lost, you know, she looks great. I'm the fat pig and she's like the hot wife now. I'm like, yeah, who's, you know, where are you, you know.
Well, you have a trophy wife without going through the pain of a second marriage.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, she's Sicilian. There's no second marriage in my life. I wrote a Valentine's Day column. Can I read it?
Yeah.
Go for it, please.
This was a while ago. I wrote this a while ago, but I wanted to read it to her for a gift. Like, that's really cheap, right? Hey, honey, I read you a poem. Anyway, here it is. The Valentine's Day gift he wanted to give her was of a photograph published in one of the papers years ago of an unidentified couple on the grass in Grant Park enjoying a long kiss. The photographer who took the picture couldn't possibly know from a distance what was going on, but that young couple was not very happy. They were breaking up, and that was their last kiss. They'd met in one of those summer college classes, the kind of elective you take just for the credits and the easy A. The young guy was a butcher, fooling himself into thinking he was a writer, and the young woman was a modern dance student, dreaming of New York. The class was called The Psychology of Consciousness, but it could have been called Meditation Light. On the first day, the instructor told the students to close their eyes and meditate. But the young guy couldn't meditate because a Sicilian girl with long black hair and big dark brown eyes walked in, and she sat down at a desk across the room, and she caught him staring at her. She made a face, shut her eyes tight, and the guy meditated helplessly, foolishly, his eyes wide open, staring at that girl. 15 or so minutes passed, and the instructor asked for comments, and one student said he felt a oneness with everyone in the room. Another said she felt like all their consciousnesses were mingling. It went on like that, the nonsense, the baloney piling higher and higher. The students became giddy with it. And finally, it was the black-haired girl's turn to speak. I keep hearing how close we are, but the truth is, I don't know any of you. So how are we supposed to feel close? Are we close because some of us closed our eyes? I don't think so. And then she looked hard at the young guy who wouldn't close his eyes. And he felt his heart flopping inside him. And later, he asked if she'd like to go for coffee. And she said, no, she didn't like being stared at. And he said, I'm sorry. And he said, please. And she said, no. And he said, please. And she said, no. And he said, please, no. So he followed her as she walked to the L. He paid a fare just so he could apologize again. Oh, okay, she said. Just coffee, next week before class. And that's how it started. He'd pick her up from rehearsals, and they'd drive the lakefront late at night listening to the blues in his car. He didn't have much money, He worked cutting chickens and boning out chucks at his father's butcher shop. But they did go out for some late-night gourmet dinners. Once around 2 a.m., they stopped at a Polish sausage shack on Maxwell Street. A single light bulb over the shack carved out a cone in the darkness. It was like looking at an Edward Hopper painting, she said. And then the fool that he was, a few days later, he made that terrible mistake that some guys make. He told her that they'd marry, that they'd have a life, that she'd give him sons. He blurted it out in a rush, and she was silent and asked, please take me home. And she phoned the next day about meeting in Grand Park. She said she had something important to tell him. It was a warm afternoon in autumn. The leaves had turned red and orange in the trees. They sat on that green grass on a nice day, and she told him they wouldn't be seeing each other anymore. She wasn't ready, and neither was he for such crazy talk of kids and a life when they hardly even knew each other. It scared her, and it should scare him, she said. But they did have that one kiss, a long kiss and the red leaves on the grass. And then she walked. What killed him was the next morning there was a photo in one of the papers, either the Tribune or the Sun-Times, of a young couple on the leaves in the park. The caption read, had the word something like young lovers, last kiss or young lovers kiss or something. You couldn't identify the pair from the photograph, but he thought he knew who they were because he knew who they were, and he threw the paper in the trash. He found himself making long drives from the south side to the north side, driving through her neighborhood in Rogers Park, hoping to catch a glimpse of her. Nothing more. These days they call it stalking. One afternoon, he thought he saw her walk into the L. He turned the car and drove back south and stopped driving up north. Months later, by accident, they met. It was an awkward, cold hello, and they went their ways. That cold hello was a horse from hell that he rode all through winter and into the spring and the summer. And just as he gave up, they met again. But there was no cold hello this time. They just had coffee. They talked. They saw each other the next day, too, and the next. They still talk about that cold hello, how frightened of it they'd been. They made a life together, a family with sons. And like many married couples, they've had their troubles and their good times. He's gray and fat, but she remembers him skinny and crazy. She's beautiful still, and her eyes and smile haven't changed. But I could never find that newspaper photo. It ran either in the Tribune or the Sun-Times of that almost last kiss more than, I guess, 30 years ago now. I've asked around to editors and photo people at both papers, and they tried to help, but they just couldn't find it. And I wanted to give it to her this Valentine's Day. But it's probably lost. So I wrote this for her instead. I am a lucky man.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I am a lucky man. So are you, Scott Stanis?
We are.
Lucky. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, after we said all the nice things about our wives.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back to reality now. All right. I can't take that.
That was such. That was great, Jen. I think you've you read that for me once many years ago, and it was touching as then as it is now.
People liked it on the radio because, you know, my voice is so much like Alistair Cook.
Very, very.
That when
similar,
I read
sure.
when I read a soft, touching story, that you can hear mm-hmm. the sort of inner Alistair coming through.
Absolutely.
What do you? All right, I talked a lot. Can you guys two talk?
Well,
for a
here we
bit?
Go. I got some more questions to kind of get us into what's going on right now. But here's a John or Eric Schreiber. Here's his question. How long do the residents of Chicago plan on keeping their blinders on? Leaving the city gave me real perspective on how completely ridiculous the manner in which the city is really run. 20 years ago, I would tell people from Chicago, but not anymore.
I cannot begin to answer that question. I've only been here for 6.5 years. John's lived here all his life.
So you don't have blinders on. So answer his question.
Well, I can tell you. I'll tell you a story. I came here from Birmingham, Alabama, which is pretty much my hometown. Still have a house there. One of my children still live there and have friends and family. So here's the difference. I came here from Alabama, okay? And everyone I say came here from Alabama, they look at me and think redneck, knuckle dragging, married my cousin. Alabama.
NASCAR.
I've been with you in Alabama.
Yeah.
Lovely wife, Janine, and Betty.
It's a great town. Here's the thing, though. And as a reporter, you appreciate this, John. You could walk into, and this is a true story, state legislator, you can walk into their office as a reporter and say, hey, listen, I need the representative's records from his state-issued cell phone. The secretary will look at you, do this. You're here printing, and then she will hand you the record. That's it. You know what you have to go through?
What?
Mind-blowing.
You know what you have to go through in this stupid town, in this stupid county, in this stupid state to get anything? We have our cop shop guys have to file FOIAs for police reports in this place. That's unbelievable.
This town is corrupt. The state is bankrupt. The city is bankrupt. The Democratic machine has run it into the ground. And all the meat puppets who were telling me years ago, hey, the city's clean.
We have flowers.
You have flowers, and Daley's a good leader, and he's, they don't have to say he's white, but that's what they meant. What they meant was there's a white guy running it, so shut up and don't rock the boat. Well, guess what? That guy spent us into oblivion, and this new little Rumpelstiltskin, he's lost control. The city doesn't like him. So everything's going to hell in a handbasket. Run away!
Will they ever catch on, John, though? I mean,
Will they run?
We lost 250,000 people in 10 years.
Look, the city is old and kids. Families are leaving. The suburbs are now people are leaving.
Yeah, they've raised what? The collar counties over the last 10 years had what? An increase of 3-point-something%?
And you know the guy in the middle of all this, the guy who's done it all, is this creature... wizened, kind of looking like Emperor Palpatine after he did the electric stuff, where his face got all crackly and old. And Scott Stannis has drawn some brilliant cartoons of this fellow, Boss Madigan. Scott, your cartoons on this guy are just outstanding.
Oh, you know what's interesting? If you look at the drawing of him I do now, and everybody recognizes it, which is awesome. It doesn't technically look like him that much, but it looks like exactly what you described, this craggly, skeletal, evil.
Someday, Lisa, this will all be
yours.
That's
my favorite.
Yes, but
wait for it. It's still mine. Or
the one where he's in the Iron Throne?
Yes. Well, you inspired that one, the Game of Thrones.
That's one of my favorite cartoons. and with the Princess Lisa. Oh, can I say that? I don't know. People get sensitive.
Oh, they hired. I've told you this. They hired. Obviously, they went to some feminist group out in D.C. who I'd never heard of
before.
Because
I've written about her on the
because I did.
Mattresses.
Because I always draw her as this little girl with this little dress the eye in Lisa's dotted with
She's
a heart.
She's only the chief law enforcement officer of the state, Lisa Madigan, that Daddy put in there.
And thank God, I say for Lisa Madigan that I'm sure she's looked hard, wide and far. There is no corruption in this state. But she has protected us from baby cribs, and thank God for that.
Baby cribs.
Yeah, that's what you. That's the thing.
Love it.
So yeah, but John, in all seriousness, and we've had this discussion, I still can't get my hands around, or my head around, the idea that these people continue to get reelected. This is 30 plus years now of this. Are they waking up now, or is that
just wishful thinking? I blame the wealthy Republicans because for years. They had it's almost like the Roman, ancient Roman times. You had these like thuggy gangs in the Aventides controlling the docks and all that for the oligarchs. So the bosses controlled the what the hoi polloi, and the equestrians lived in wherever they lived, Lake Bluff, Lake Forest, wherever they lived, and they stood out there and they rode to the hounds, yeah, and it worked. But you know what? The money ran out. There's no money. We don't have money for cops. We don't have enough money to have police officers in a car, two police officers in a car. Give me a break. You know, and when carjackings were taking place in Rahm's neighborhood, and the TV goes crazy then, you know, people get slaughtered on the South Side all the time. It's a story. We'll do a stand-up.
Send a copter.
Those are those people.
Yeah, and this time when they do it out there, you send the copter, and we're looking for the guy. So let's see what happens there.
Yeah. All right, another question. This is from Vince Sikora. It's for you, Scott. Are you also responsible for the speech balloons and their content?
That's actually a great question, Vince. Thanks. Yes. I am responsible for the entire content of the cartoon. The Chicago Tribune happily views me as an independent columnist. I just happen to draw instead of write. And so I'm responsible for the whole thing. I get edited, you know, obviously, and sometimes more heavily than I like. But that's the temperament of an artist. But it's all mine, Vince, all mine.
You know what? Can we just, because part of this podcast, The Chicago Way with John Kess, Jeff Carlin, and sitting in Scott Stennis, is to talk about stuff that we don't really talk about in the news.
Sure.
All right, so let's just let people in on a secret that you
okay.
and I know.
Oh, gosh. The undisclosed location?
There is a cell.
It's a sleeper cell.
A sleeper cell of secret people that meet secretly. I'd say there's about four of us. Sometimes we just walk back and forth in the hallway and we just nod. We acknowledge each other. But there's really a handful. This is the Chicago Tribune, which was once the bastion of conservatism and still by no, like, brainless fish who write for other papers still rip us as if we're conservative, which I disagree. But I markedly disagree.
Yes.
But there is a group of people. I think there are a couple, three or four conservatives still left. Do you think that there are?
About four. Yes.
Are these people afraid, or do they just don't want to be known?
Well, let's not out them.
Okay, we'll just they meet secretly in cells of three, so they can't be broken. Although I have to confess, someone did try to put a rat cage in my head once.
Is that right?
No, not really. But I'm trying to continue the whole 1984 thing, and it's not working. Okay, Jeff, save me.
I would say that you're not alone in your conservative groupings, but yeah, I've heard rumors that there are dark shadows and places in the building that
where we can meet.
Right, hallways and those unmarked elevators. And
we have to put on some white noise so it blocks the recording.
Actually,
devices.
I carry like old National Reviews when they were conservative under Buckley. Remember when they stopped being conservative under... And then now they're conservative again under Lowry. Or the closing, the Conservative Mind by Russell Kirk. And if you carry it around the newsroom and just tap it, other people know what you're... Yes, I'm one of you. Yes.
Well, I have a Ronald Reagan T-shirt. It looks a lot like a Che T-shirt, but it's Ronald Reagan instead. And so it's so funny to see reporters go, hey, that's really... Wait a minute.
All right. Here's something I want to ask you guys about.
There's no bias.
No bias.
No.
So the president is making a rare and unnatural visit to Illinois.
Check you out with the psychology.
Well, it's odd. I mean, is it not? I mean, what other general assemblies or state assemblies has he gone to and talked before?
Well, I'm sure someplace in Iran or Islamic State, but go on.
No, he's spoken to various. He's been, like, he was in Saudi Arabia. He bowed to the king.
That's true.
Remember that? Bowing like a bird, like one of those drinking birds, like on the edge of your glass. I mean, really showing the top of your head to the emperor is like, I don't know. Is that a presidential thing? He's learned not to. And now he's here. And he came into Springfield this week to what? What did he come for?
Apparently, the bits of the speech that are being leaked right now are that it's going to be, we should all get along. Can't we all just get along?
I said this in a column about him today, this week. The one introducing him, you know, and I have two stories that I write in the column about things that happened between me and Barack, one in the, that maybe you'd want to read or not read, Mr. Obama, President Obama. But my problem with him is not him. I think his policies are disastrous for the country. I think his politics are ridiculous. But that's just not the person. I always separate that. I never give him a mutza, ever. He's the president. But what bothers me, Scott, and I'd like to ask you both, the butt-kissing from the media on this guy. The treating him as if he were, you know, found in a reed basket along the Chicago River as an infant, or, you know, that he's some kind of unicorn with a flowing mane that you want to pet and get miracles from. The media's treatment of him, in the main, I think, has been, that's what drives, you know, like they're all stoned on hopium. That's what drives me crazy.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you look at the coverage, even now, when all evidence to the contrary, that this presidency has been, while, you know, various degrees of not good.
I'll give him credit for not put more young men and women into war.
Okay.
I give him a lot of credit for that. Did people get health care? Yes. Are your health care premiums rising by 40-50%?
Yep.
Yes. And people haven't figured, you know why the people, you know, angry voters are angry? That's part. But yeah. The other stuff is just unconscionable.
No, I was in Washington.
You bitter clinger?
A couple of years ago. And had the opportunity to be in the briefing room, actually, when Carney, at the time, the press secretary, was talking about the Benghazi was caused by a video. And he was, it was funny, I ran across my notes the other day, yeah. And he was just emphatic that that's what this was.
Jay Carney.
Yes.
The chinless weasel.
Yes.
The press secretary for Barack
Now a special
Obama.
Commentator for CNN.
And you know what he did in Chicago? Hmm. Jay Carney, the Barack Obama press secretary then. He was a CNN reporter back then and a Time reporter. And he did a piece on Richard Daley. This was, I guess, his audition piece to become press secretary. But this was so-called real journalism. And he did a glowing profile about Daley. I'm sure Axelrod loved it. I kid you not.
I'm going to sit down.
Daley watches over Chicago like Andy watched over Mayberry.
Oh, good Lord.
And if there's someone who needed to get kicked right in the special purpose at that moment when he said Mayberry or something, it would have been him.
Well,
they took this town and destroyed it.
Watching, watching how the press, I mean, they've muzzled the press corps and intimidated them to the nth degree. So they're not covering this administration.
Why?
Because the press corps let it happen. Rather than raising holy hell, they are so afraid not to have, access is more important to them than doing their jobs. They feel they can't do their jobs if they don't have access. And as a reporter, you know that's probably true. But by turns, if they do it in mass and say, no, we're not going to follow these rules, then, you know, you stand up for journalism freedom. And they certainly didn't exercise that, at least what I witnessed.
The fact that people get tribal.
Yeah.
About Benghazi. Well, I can see people in the newsroom, Benghazi. But, you know, this new stuff with Hillary.
Yeah.
Right? She held her, the email thing.
Yeah.
She hid those emails, put them on a private server so we wouldn't know about the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
And as a result, the Chinese and the Russians probably got access to her.
Oh, yes.
Secrets.
Well, and then you just stop back. And I hate to say this because a lot of reporters, there's a lot of great reporters.
He's shaking his head. Why are you shaking your head?
No, it's awful. I absolutely.
Oh,
right.
I thought you were shaking your head. I'm going to be the hipster in the room.
Yeah,
like,
it's too cool.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm just going to bring up the point. Whenever any newspaper or a television station loses a reporter to mm-hmm. the government, who do they go to work for? It's almost never a Republican. It's never a conservative think tank. It's always.
Because most of them are, look, let's just admit it. Most, and I married a liberal.
Yeah, me too.
I love her. She used to march in the No Nukes parades.
No, Janine went to No Nuke concerts, yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. And I remember Betty, when she first met my dad, who, like, was on the, against the communists in the Greek Civil War, okay, and loved the king. And she was like, and thought Reagan was the greatest thing because he was anti-communist. And she meets my dad. And she's like, yes, Mr. Cass, I march in the No Nukes parades. And he said, took a big drag, and he said, excuse me, young lady, you march in what? The No Nuke parade? That's how it started.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
But he loved her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do love liberals. There's just probably so few of us.
Yeah, well, and that's the point. Like I said, when reporters leave, they go to work for Democrats. It's just almost exclusively. Not entirely, but there's rare exception, but exclusively. And that's because that's where their heart lies. And it's frustrating.
We're moving into the South Carolina primaries now.
Oh, boy.
And Nevada.
Yeah.
How do you see Scott Stanis and Jeff Carlin? How do you guys see the thing shaping up?
I think Hillary's going to, as I mentioned earlier, she's going to take on and just decimate Sanders, or try to
decimate
destroy him.
Decimate means, actually, sorry to do this to you.
Yeah.
Decimate means you take one out of every 10 soldiers and kill them. That's decimating.
Okay.
So she'll take one out of every, what, hairs on his head?
It's going to be a scorched earth policy. It's going to be vicious. It's going to be a full frontal attack. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be brutal.
How is it that, is there any racism, though, here where in the commentary, Jeff Carlin? I think where the assumptions are, black people don't, you know, there's a big black vote in the South, and they don't like Bernie Sanders. How do these experts of conventional wisdom know this?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, the polling, but that stuff's always crap.
Total crap.
I mean, they had Trump winning Iowa. I don't know. I don't think... I think Bill, and we know Bill historically.
Because he's the first black president.
Right, exactly. Because
yeah, right.
He is historically polled well. And if that's, you know, they keep playing that card, roll him out there and follow him.
I got a problem, though, guys. I got to ask you both this.
All right.
Hillary came out with the burn, you know, Monty Python, the burn the witch moment. Burn the witch. That's what Hillary's people did. I'm reversing it. They did it when Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, says, if you don't support Hillary, you're going to hell. And Gloria Steinem said, young women are gravitating to Bernie because that's where the cute boys are, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the screeching from the sort of 55, 60-plus female Democrat audience on how dare anyone mention anything about what Steinem, who was born, I guess, when Bonnie and Clyde died, and Madeleine Albright said, it's like you're not allowed to repeat it. Why are they so defensive?
Because it was this stupid things to say. First off, I thought Madeleine Albright, that was a telling moment when a Democrat actually acknowledged religion. But
she's very bright and very good Secretary of State.
Okay.
Some might say.
Well, it wasn't the other day when she said there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women.
But I'm talking about the reaction in the media by some people who are very upset that this would become part of a story. So what say you, young man Jeff Carlin,
looking at
these older, you know, Hillary-loving women, and God bless them, I love you guys too, but they're just so furious now. Why is that?
I don't know why it is, but I think everything's fair game. I mean,
Is it the way to convince millennial women
to tell them
they're going to hell or they're sluts or something?
They're not. They've already lost that vote entirely.
Yeah,
they've got to
reinvigorate their base and get them out in numbers. That's the only way. There's no way you can cure whatever Bernie is selling to people, because those people are coming out. Look at Iowa. Look at New Hampshire. You know, record outcomes as far as people voting there.
And Trump, too.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But so both those forces are working against the establishment, you know, on both sides. And you're not going to be able to pull those people away from that fringe and say, oh, you know, all this time we've been working for you. Trust us. You know, we may not have been talking right to you, but trust us. Come back. You've already lost those people.
Right,
so they got to figure something out.
Well, and that's where the hope for the Hillary campaign, at least in South Carolina, where it's a much more racially mixed state.
Bernie Sanders, black baby.
Yeah.
Right.
Would you vote for a man? Would you vote for a socialist who had a Republican black baby?
A capitalist baby who happened to be African American. And Bernie.
Forced to be a capitalist.
This, you know, I kind of like Bernie's wife. I've never heard her speak.
Hmm?
She just looks like a normal person, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of like that. I like his attitude. I disagree with everything he stands for. To me, it's like hell in a handbasket. Throw the whole culture in the truck and drive it off the edge. But there's something about a guy who goes to Moscow for his honeymoon when Brezhnev yeah. was in power and doesn't back down. There's a certain thing that he doesn't back down to from his beliefs. Same thing with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
What's Trump's message? I'm going to go to Washington. I'm going to kick them all in the crotch. Right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to win. Simple. Guess what? People want to hear it because you know why? Because that combine in Washington and in Springfield and everywhere else, Democrats and Republicans, those insiders would rather lose their party's election than lose control of their machinery because that's where they eat. And people know it. Like, how could... Nobody on Wall Street went to prison for what happened in the economic ripoff of the century?
One banker.
One banker did what? Some middle-level guy?
Yeah, of course.
What happened to all the big shots who were giving each other?
They got bonuses from the bailout.
They got bonuses. The Obama and Bush give them bailouts, mm-hmm. and then they give each other bonuses? While guys in regular jobs are getting fired?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, I think we all know how it works.
Right, and this is the payback.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they're like, you know what? We're not playing like peasants storming Frankenstein's castle. We're actually going to do it now.
Yeah.
And why not?
Yeah. What have we got to lose? I mean, we've lost everything anyway. Our wages aren't going up. You know? I mean, we could have the whole list. We're screwed.
There's a whole list, but, you know, there's one thing that can make put a smile on your face. Even though I don't eat them, I'm more of a Vienna beef and Daisy brand. John Cass, the Chicago Way with Jeff Carlin, and sitting in Scott Stannis, the greatest cartoonist in the land. He's huge. See you next week, everybody.